Hello and hi, welcome back to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
And I'm Darren Gulsvig.
I'm Noah Richman.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Ginny Koch.
And we are all here to dive in to Star Wars with a carving knife, because that's how some of our panelists today feel about the movie.
I guess we should say The Force Awakens.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Just mostly The Force Awakens, but how it also impacts the global Star Wars story. But yeah, mostly The Force Awakens and what that means for most Star Wars fans out there who are, you know, those of us who are invested since the first one came out when we were kids and we're having our childhood raked over the coals again. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, my thought. So.
Well,
for me, I'm a little older than you guys, not a lot, but a little. So for me, I was a mid-teenager when it came out. When A New Hope, sorry, the really good one came out.
So when you say mid-teenager, Jeannie,
15.
Precisely.
I was 15. Okay.
I was 14.
Out. Okay, so we're about the same age. Yeah. So,
and I think, let's see, Star Wars came out in 77, but my parents didn't let me see it till 78. I remember, bold as day, I remember the full page ad saying Star Wars, 85th week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that got up to like 105 eventually, because I remember it came out of the second run, the dollar theaters, the cheapy theaters, mm-hmm. about 2 months before Empire Strikes Back came out, which I thought was remarkable.
Yeah.
Considering that by that time it had been on, I guess, an HBO precursor called Super TV, and that was the only movie they had. So that movie, Star Wars, was running 24/7. And one of my little cousins, who was like 6 or 7 years old at the time, had watched it so many times, our form of entertainment was turning the volume down and listening to him do all of the dialogue and the sound effects.
I just remember staying in line with my father and us, my brothers. We were just elated because I got to finally see the Star Wars movie that all the kids at school had been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember after we got done going to Montgomery Ward's, no, actually it was Sears and Roebuck, and then seeing this huge wall of toys. And at that point, I'd never seen toys that small coming from the G.I. Joe. And it was like looking at creation of a whole new thing. And it was just mind-boggling how great
it was. Because you were. I mean, that's where Lucas's real genius was, in understanding that licensing was going to be the way to go. That's where he made all of his money, is in licensing. So, from a business standpoint, you know, the man is a genius. From a storytelling standpoint, for me personally, A New Hope is always, my big memories of A New Hope, other than the first time seeing it, just being awed. My mother, while we were living in Southern California, my mother took me and a friend and drove us to Century City, dropped us off where we could watch the movie over and over and over again. And she went shopping and did stuff and got us, like, you know, 8 hours later. And
wow.
Seen it like 3.5 times. Oh, it's great. And I just did that constantly. That was the first movie I ever saw in double digits. And I loved A New Hope. I am one of the few that doesn't really like Empire that much. I don't hate it. I think it's a good movie. But I hate the cliffhanger ending. And I don't hate Return of the Jedi. I like the first three movies. But if I can only have one, I want A New Hope.
Okay.
And the first three, I won't even acknowledge them existing. I really do. My husband loves them. They're horrible.
Sacrilege. That must be some interesting arguments at home.
You know, it's just one of those things that he's allowed to like stuff I hate. I'm allowed to like stuff he hates. It's just I won't really watch them again. I've seen them more than once. I gave them their due, and I'm on deadline now all the time, and if it's like I can see this, or I can do one of the short stories that's due, or work on one of the novels that's due, it's it's got to be something I really want to see, or it has to be something like I'm going for Slice, so I'm going to do this as a critic. But if it's just for fun, it really has to be a feeling. And if I'm just sitting down in my couch and watching, it still has to be a feeling. And the first three movies are not.
Okay.
So, given that, Jeannie, where do you fall with The Force Awakens?
First of all, I should warn all of our listeners, we are going deep into spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, or you want to avoid spoilers, this is not the show for you just yet.
Yeah, it really isn't. Frankly, if you haven't seen it by now, you know, you're not going to, or you don't care, is my opinion. But I'm going to try to crit sandwich it. Not really. I'm going to say the few things I like. I really like Rey. I really like Finn. I really like Poe. And I really like BB-8. And I really wish that they'd had a good movie to be in. I loathe Kylo Ren. What a ridiculous joke of a villain. There's no terror there. Someone just needs to spank him or take away his cell phone for a couple of weeks. And I hated seeing the old characters. I felt that this was the for this is there's been nothing that's come out in the last 20 years that has been this surefire of a global hit. You literally could have done anything and it would have made billions of dollars. You could have been daring or original or really do something different. And instead, you went for the laziest possible route, the easiest thing, a rehash of not just one movie, but all six in certain ways, but especially A New Hope. The new things that they brought, Rey, Finn, Poe, BB-8, all of those were fabulous. And they would have been so much better in a film that actually didn't rely on, once again, the stupidest timeline on the planet, okay? Star Wars timelines are always bad, okay? They're always ridiculous. So one person's aging 10 years, another person's aging 50 in the same time. And that stuff bothers me, and it always has. But I just felt it was lazy. Every choice, they went with the laziest possible choice. And the thrill, and I'm so tired of saying, oh, it was for the fans. What I interpret for the fans to mean is, we think you're so stupid, you'll like anything, so we didn't put any effort in. It's for you. Okay, I don't want something for the fans. I want something good. Okay, and this wasn't good.
Well, Jeannie, I would say to your comment there about a surefire hit, that's what they were saying in 1999 when Phantom Menace came out. Everybody was so stoked for the return of Star Wars.
It made a fortune.
It did. And frankly, all the prequels made a fortune.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that you had a surefire hit. This one, even more than those three. You literally, this was a license to print money. So why didn't you put something forth that was good as opposed to the laziest choice? That's my complaint.
Yeah, see, I disagree with you there. I think one of the things they looked at is, say what you will about the storytelling problems in the prequels, and there are many, and we don't need to go down that tangent.
Yes. Yeah,
okay?
That's ours.
But part of the problem, and I have, and we'll get into this in a minute, but part of the problem was it wasn't Star Wars that everybody expected it to be. When Phantom Menace came out, it was all new, different characters except for Yoda, and it was all a different feel. Instead of the frontier, it was the heart of the galactic, the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of what they did with The Force Awakens is, yeah, they took a safe route by mining some nostalgia, but my feeling is that part of that was to play it a little safe, but the other part of it, from a Star Wars perspective in my mind, is that rather than being a rehash, it becomes cycles of history. And I disagree with you on Kylo Ren, and I disagree with you on bringing the old characters back, because the difference is the old characters are old. They're not I was going to say, they're not pretending that time hasn't passed, but that's part of, in my mind, the flaw with Han Solo. He's trying to pretend that time hasn't passed. He's behaving as though he's still this rogue. But that comes back to haunt him, because as we find out, what's going on with Kylo Ren. You're right. Is he whiny? But he's, that's to me was the appeal. He isn't this villain in terms of stock villainy. Okay. He wasn't a bad guy out being bad, which is what Darth Vader was when we first meet him in A New Hope. He's just a bad guy. He chokes people because he can. Kylo Ren is a conflicted guy who wants to be a villain, but he's like a teenager. He's torn up.
I found that
refreshing. I found that to be a welcome change. I like the change in Han and Leia's relationship.
Can I interject something real quick?
You can try.
Absolutely.
Well, interestingly enough, I'm of the fan that I was kind of annoyed by just how templative it was. It was basically like, oh, here we have this deadly euphemism of the Star Killer Base, you know, the weapon. Mm-hmm. And they kept, I remember referring it to as the weapon. It's like, okay, guys, we've seen this before. And honestly, it was almost like it was lazy. And when you talk about Han Solo's progression and how he thinks, you're also filling in a lot of blanks. If your mindset at the time is enjoying that, then you can do that. But for me, I felt it was an insult the way they basically took a shit on all the fans of the traditional Star Wars, because I just felt that story had been told. And to bring him back, and watch the spoiler here, but to bring him back and to kill him the way they did was such a bitch move. And in fact, I want to see the Han Solo, if anything, go out a hero. And it was really just a shitty thing to do. And as a kid, he was my favorite. And the way they did it, it was like a punch to my throat. And I just, it seemed mean-spirited. And the thing is, I know that Harrison Ford wanted out of the part, but then why even bring him back to do it to begin with? Because it was totally, in my mind, disrespectful to those fans that really enjoyed Harrison's character as Han Solo. Yeah. So that really rubbed me the wrong way. And I've seen it twice, and I just feel the same way about it. And it wasn't necessary, because it felt it was a way to kind of, okay, let's bring in the nostalgia back so we can appease both sides of the fans. I didn't even think it was necessary. So
I agree. So I hated what they did with him. I hated what they did with the relationship. But Leia, that I knew from the first movies, would not have put up with that. She's the only woman that makes him want to not roam. He's her scoundrel. And I'm really tired of Hollywood having made the decision that just because they can't stay married, the rest of us can't either. I really feel like, you know, you have two choices with tragedy hits. You can tear yourself apart, or you can get stronger together. And I just have always envisioned those two characters being stronger together. And I felt that they just threw up on anyone who actually was cheering for that couple as a romantic ideal. Oh, well, true love doesn't last. Oh, they couldn't possibly work through this. And I just, that's like saying anybody who loses a child, well, you're just going to get divorced.
Well,
and
you know, so
I'm definitely not.
No, see, I disagree with that, because I think that relationship that came out between Han and Leia really comes out of the stress that they are in, because they're thrown in, they're running from the Empire, and Empire Strikes Back, and sparks fly. But there isn't enough there for a basis of a relationship. When you really stop and think about it, he's taunting her at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, okay? They're basically running for their lives. There's a spark. She's cute. He's roguishly handsome. The end of the relationship, he basically gets frozen. She's carrying on with this romantic notion when they unthaw that everything's okay. And he's trying to grow into it, but that's the thing that I like about it. Over the course of 20, 30 years, and I agree with you, Jeannie, the Star Wars has never been strong on the passage of time as it goes. But I liked the idea that when the war is over, when they beat the Empire, what is there that keeps them together? And I can see them kind of being at odds, and I could see them having a child because they think maybe that will keep them together. And it turns out it doesn't. And I wonder, this is one of those things that I watched the film. I've watched it twice. I can't help but wonder, Han has basically run off to become roguish Han Solo again, okay? Trying to capture the glories of the past. I can't help but wonder if this resistance to the First Order wasn't something that Leia kind of got started because she didn't know what else to do with herself, except she's always been the head of a rebellion fighting oppression. And I wonder if her action with this resistance was the tail that wagged the dog and got the New Republic involved in this mess.
I think you're giving it more thought than anybody
can. Yeah, can I watch the movie that you're talking about? Because I didn't see that movie, man. It was connected dots, man. It was like, oh, how can we get the Millennium Falcon into the scene? Oh, okay, it just happens to be right there. Oh, and by the way, Han Solo happens to be looking for the galaxy and happens to come across the Millennium Falcon. It just seems so freaking lazy. It's like they took a whiteboard and took all these post-it notes saying, okay, how can we bring in this character in? Okay, we can do it. We connect the dots. We bring him into this scene. And it just seems so force-fed. Now, talking from your point of view and passion, you know, I'd like to see that movie that you're talking about because I didn't see it.
Yeah, well, I didn't see that movie.
One thing I'd really be curious to hear, though, is how would you respond to what Darren was talking about with them bringing Han back, giving him all this screen time, getting you reinvested in the character, and then just sort of killing him off, and Darren's feeling like that was kind of a bitch move. How did it strike you?
Well, first of all, this is in terms of the Star Wars film. For me, this is one of the places where reality intrudes. I envision that Lucasfilm goes to Harrison Ford and says, we want you to be in the movie. And he says, no, we want you to be in. We said, no. And they say to him, how much would it take for you to be in it? And he pulls out this astronomically ridiculous number. And then they slide the pile of money at him. and he goes, okay, I'm in. And I'll agree with you there. I think that in some ways he got more time than he ought to have. But knowing that Harrison Ford has wanted to be out of the role as far back as Empire Strikes Back, and seeing how Harrison Ford phones in his performance in Return of the Jedi, I thought he was more engaged in the role than I expected him to be. And I don't have a problem. I don't feel like they have taken a dump on me as a fan. I think they were trying to shake things up. I think it's an interesting... Again, you could say I'm trying to connect the dots, but I think it's an interesting move because against the backdrop of the cycle of history where the big empire makes the giant weapon, the good guys have to fly in. Yeah, they have to fly in and blow it up. Yeah, we've seen that
again.
Before. Right.
And again.
Granted. And they even kind of poke at it when they have the briefing and Han goes, okay, so it's bigger. So what? So there's got to be a place to blow it up. I mean, yes, we get that. To me, that just simply becomes backdrop. And I thought, even though you can kind of see it coming, to me, the first time around, it was still a gut punch, but the right kind of gut punch to see Han get the lightsaber put through him from his son.
We can agree to disagree. So,
and the other part of it is, unlike Obi-Wan Kenobi, he's not coming back.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but right. You know, one of the things. Speaking of the rebellion, okay. As far as I can understand it from the movie, the alliance is still there. The government is in place. The government that overthrew the Emperor is in place. That's the government that the First Order is fighting against. The First Order is not the government. The First Order is a rebellion. So what are the rebelling against?
No, they're
police force?
This is where it's vague, and this is... Well, okay.
This is my point. Where... If it's vague, that's their fault.
This
should be clear. You know.
I agree with you there, but it comes down to this for me. It is that the thing that I really like ultimately about The Force Awakens is, for me, it does what the original Star Wars did in 1977. It gives a slice of a larger universe, and I enjoy trying to fill in all those empty spaces. It stimulates my imagination in ways that very few science fiction fantasy stories do. I think one of the biggest problems that the prequels had is that they went back in time to fill in the blanks that we have all been filling in our own heads for 20 years at that point. They filled in those blanks, and it wasn't anywhere near as good as we had in our imagination. Now, I'll say that for episode 7, part of how I'll ultimately judge it will depend upon episode 8 and episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, like you said, you know, yeah, I'd like to see the movie you saw. Well, I saw that movie, but that's where it stimulated me. It was more about what does this mean? What's going on with that? How do you get from this point from that point? And to me, that's what Star Wars has really always been about.
And that's the mythology, but that's to me a sign of bad movie making then, because, you know, it's one thing is implied. And sure, I've done the thing that's, you know, about envisioning where this whole story is going. But, and again, mm-hmm. what I don't mean to keep on dragging this, but it's like that story had been told already. There was no reason to bring that back. And if you're what you're saying and is your opinion or even knowledge that they only did it then for money, which to me even furthers my whole point to begin with, and it is that they just did these things to be creating money opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here's the problem that, you know, with what Ginny said and what Darren said, it's pretty accurate. They knew ahead of time that half of the living, breathing, not brain dead humans on this planet were going to go see that movie eventually. There was no way that they were going to get less than 3 billion people eventually seeing this movie. They could have taken the time to make a story that would have had these people wanting to go see this movie 10 times in the theater, 15 times in the theater.
Yeah.
You know, because I know people who did that with the first one. You know, I eventually saw it 3 times, but I know people who paid to see the movie 20 times. You're not going to get that with the new ones.
Yeah, right.
I'm one of them. And I'll tell you, the other thing that I find very upsetting is that the whole fact that, well, I have to see how the next movie, answers come in the next movie. Every movie should be able to stand alone. You don't have to see you don't have to see The Godfather to see Godfather 2. Okay? You don't have to see Godfather 2 if you don't want to. Both of those movies, two of the greatest movies that are made in American cinema, you don't need to see them together. They are better if you get to see them together. But you don't need to. I don't want to be required to find out what happened in this movie, which for me felt like not much. I don't want to be required to see another movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Enjoy that movie.
That was something that bothered me too. I would like to go back to the point that Tim was making, though, which is an interesting point of what we are creating in our heads already with, you know, like the gaps. And he was sort of talking about the prequels. This was a problem with the prequels. But actually, for me, this was also an issue with episode 7, that as far as I was concerned, they had already beaten the Empire at the end of episode 6. And I was curious, okay, now how does the world rebuild now? With the Emperor having been destroyed, Darth Vader being gone, and the dark side being vanquished, what's this new universe to explore now? And for me, the thing that was kind of a disappointment is I don't get that new universe. Instead, I get the dark side is now reforming, and once again, Leia is head of some kind of rebellion, and there's a new kind of Darth Vader figure, and there's a new Death Star. And so it isn't really going anywhere completely different. It sort of feels like a bit of a rehash. That was the thing that I, you know, was a little difficult for me. Did you have any of that, Tim, or was that really not coming up for you with this?
You know, not so much. And I guess at the risk of
you're allowed to like it.
Yeah, no, I know. Not to put too fine a point on it, I have already gotten through the fact that Star Wars will never address those kinds of issues. As a bit of digression, I'm one of the few people that absolutely loves Babylon 5's fifth season A lot of people complain it's subpar, but the reason I like it is because it shows what happens after Happily Ever After. In the fourth season, they defeat the Shadows, they defeat the evil Psycor that's been running EarthGov and all the rest, and they're setting up the Interstellar Alliance. Well, then the next season is basically how the whole thing nearly falls apart. I've recognized after Return of the Jedi they were never going to do that. That's just not the kind of story that the Star Wars universe really wants to tell. And in fact, one of the things I had a problem with in Return of the Jedi is that for two movies, they set up this universe where there is objectively good and objectively evil. And then all of a sudden, Obi-Wan's ghost shows up and goes, oh, well, it all depends upon a certain point of view, which works in something like Star Trek. It works in Babylon 5. Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, is all about that. But that's not what Star Wars is. And I'm fine with it being at a certain level of simplistic storytelling. I'm really not looking for it as much as everybody has trowled on this notion that it's our modern myth and that it's, you know, the epitome of Campbellian hero's journey, whatever. It's a swashbuckling space opera. It's space wizards with laser swords. It's just not to me. It doesn't need to be much more than that. And the times in my mind where it has tried to give me that, it's failed.
But did you ever, in your imaginations of what a part seven could be, did you ever envision it maybe being something other than the Empire versus the Rebellion and the dark versus the light? Or do you sort of feel like, well, that is Star Wars?
That's it. And that's why when I say that, while I acknowledge from a plot standpoint, it's rehashing A New Hope. In a sense, Return of the Jedi was rehashing A New Hope. The thing for me was that we had characters who were moving in different directions against that same backdrop. We see a failed marriage with Han and Leia, and we see an estranged son. We see the hero of the trilogy, Luke Skywalker, has gone completely missing. Mm-hmm. And against that, now it becomes, it's the same but different. Okay, I really wasn't looking for anything radically different. If I'm looking for a different story, I don't look to Star Wars for it. Star Wars is what it is, as much as I hate to say that. That's what the story is. That's what the universe is. It's this good versus evil. It's space wizards, laser swords.
I do this for a living, okay? And if I turned in a book that was the exact same rehash of every other book I ever did, I wouldn't have a career. Okay, so you talked about with a good story that doesn't give everybody an issue with, well, what about this? Okay, I'm just going to say, 20 years ago, Bill Clinton was president. Remember who he was? Is he a myth to you? Do you think he's a myth to somebody in, you know, Algeria? No. 20 years is not enough time for someone to move into myth. And yet, part of what drives this story is that they're all myths. It's all real. Well, of course it is. It was just 20 years ago. Sure, maybe Ren and Finn are a little bit too young, but no one around them is. It's just things like that that make it, my personal feeling, I think this would have been much better if they jumped it 200 years in the future and didn't bring back any old characters.
I agree. That's the way I felt.
Then it's a myth. Then all I get to do is enjoy the new characters and what they're going through and the excitement and all this, and I can believe things have risen and fallen. Great, and now all these new characters, and you can do the same beat because it's new characters who are on a new space opera adventure. Your point about Phantom Menace, well, people didn't mind that it was different characters. We minded that it was boring, okay? That, oh, you're talking about taxation, and I'll give you. Taxation is a reason why people go to war. But it's really boring to watch. His Senate stuff was confusing, stupid, and boring. So that's what, you know, why people like the Clones movie.
Which movie?
The Clone.
Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones. There has some action. Things are going on. Other things are going on. Sith has the stuff going on. All of it is a recycle of a recycle of a recycle. But they're different enough that at least you can handle it. This is just a full recycle. And I wanted a better version of the recycle. I do this for a living, and so I resent when somebody has the most surefire to hit that they took the laziest.
I want to interject one little perspective of, shall we say, difference of information processing between generations and between... Yeah, we're talking planets that are light years apart. The communication isn't actually centralized and disseminated to everybody equally. And as a informational tangent, I was in the lobby when a showing of the movie Apollo 13 let out.
Mm-hmm.
A group of 20-somethings, we're talking college-age people, possibly about to graduate college, walked by going, "Oh my God, that was such an amazing movie. Can you imagine what it would have been like if that really happened?" I almost killed every single one of them with my bare hands.
So
if that can happen in this modern world... That did happen.
Okay.
That did happen. Two friends of mine had to hold me back while I lost it. I completely lost it. And I made a pretty much a big ass of myself that evening, but I felt it would have been justifiable homicide because people that oblivious really, really should not be any position of responsibility ever in their lifetime. But I can believe where
your peers would not have convicted.
No, a jury of my peers would have gone, "Dude, you did us a favor." Because when we get old, they'd be running things.
Right. Now they can walk around the rest of their life knowing that Tom Hanks was an astronaut at least.
So yeah. I can see where certain stories or historical events might appear as myth or fiction to other groups of people who weren't in the central areas when it happened or who just didn't take history class. So yeah. I will give them a pass on that because, like I said,
if that was the only thing, I could ignore it.
Okay.
It's just piling on the pile of what made me unhappy in this film. And by the way, I think it looks beautiful.
The cinematography is
beautiful. It's so nice to see. No, there's so much less reliance on CGI. I thought the new actors were uniformly really good.
Yep.
I mean, I couldn't stand Kylo Ren, but Adam Driver did a good job with what I think is still one of the worst villains I've ever seen.
Are we officially calling him Emo Sith?
Oh, I'm calling him Emo Kylo Ren. He's not even a Sith. He doesn't rate Sith. He's just emo. He's emo Kylo Ren. Though I have to say that his Twitter is hilarious. There's a very lonely Luke Twitter, and there's an emo Kylo. There's a lot of them, but the two I actually call them emo Kylo Ren, and they are hilarious.
Nice.
So I'm really glad a couple people have nothing to do with their day other than do that, because they are really funny. So also, I resent that we are having... that we are just okay with the fact that Luke, the hero, just ran away when things were bad.
Well, but see, we don't. That's the thing. We don't know that story. And while I appreciate what you say about movies, that you want movies that are self-contained, I think that's part of the hook for the next one. What really is the story? We don't know what that story is. And again, this gets back to something I said before. I'm having a good time figuring out what that is on my own. Whether or not it's right or not is another matter. And whether or not it lives up to what my imagination has conjured in my own head, that's another question as well. But for the time being, I'm very pleased to let things percolate in my head to make me wonder.
Yeah, well, I can say they better come up with a darn good explanation for why Rey is able to just use the Force with almost no training.
Oh, yeah. It was, I can do this.
That bothered me less than some other things. Again, it's one of those things that if that's the only issue, you can ignore it because everything else is so awesome. And I think a lot of these things that would almost be nitpicking were pointing out because it just, once you start being pulled out and your suspension of disbelief is being taken away and you're just saying, oh God, really? You start noticing all these other things. I mean, while I was in the theater, I definitely was entertained. Okay, I followed the movie. It was entertaining. There were a lot of things I was thinking, oh my God, really? But it was an entertaining time. Is this a great movie? No, it's not. Do billions of people disagree with me? Yes, they do. And, you know, that's the beauty of art. Everybody gets to like what they want. And not everybody has to hate it. But I felt like I was the only person in this vast wasteland saying, I don't think this is very good. But my husband didn't like it. My daughter didn't like it. And her fiancé didn't like it. And we were coming with four very different viewpoints about it, and all of us felt the same way.
Will this affect you wanting to see episode 8? How do all of you feel about going?
I have no interest in episode 8. I'll see it, I'm certain, but I have no interest in it. I'm sure I'll end up seeing it, but I don't care.
I have to say, they've already ripped my heart out, so what else, you know? Yeah, of course I'm going to see it, because for many reasons, I'm not willing to give up on the entire franchise, obviously, because I've got, you know, my whole life almost invested in it. And I only hope that it's going to get better, because I know there's a lot of stories to be told. I definitely interested in it. It's just, I hope in the future that we're not going to get something that's so damn obvious. And it's, I swear to God, when I watched the movie, it felt like I was watching a movie that where you got a group of writers into a room. Said, okay, guys, we just got Harrison. So how can we get him in the movie? And then how can we bring, I know, this lightsaber all of a sudden start talking to somebody, because it'll bring in. it just seems so freaking convenient. And I just, like I said, it bothered me the entire time. And of course, Star Wars isn't high art here. I mean, come on, the whole phrase itself. But again, it was just that I keep on going back to this, but look, I'd already seen that story, and we don't need to continue just telling it. It ended really nice, and then on a high note, 200 years later, you know, so now we've got separation. We don't need to just bring a character back or even to show them. Another thing, too, is they just looked real old, and I know that you're saying, okay, that's time's passed, but not just for a character point, but just as actors. You know, I believe when you act, you have to do it a lot to keep your chops sharp, and by Carrie Fisher not acting very much, boy, her performance really was flat, and so was Harrison Ford's, for that matter. And it just looked like, oh crap, because in the beginning you had all this good chemistry going, and then all of a sudden those guys pop on screen. It was just like, ugh.
Yep. How I felt. Yeah. I didn't want
it. It felt like, ugh. I was actually kind of uncomfortable watching Harrison walk around on screen. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel. And then, of course, when Carrie came out, it was just like, oh my God. You know, and I've seen her in interviews, and we knew she was, you know, just like nature happens, you get old. But to see her assume the role of Princess Leia, it's just, she didn't seem like a princess at all. She just seemed like, you know, an old lady.
How much of the disconnect do you think is because J.J. Abrams just rolled with it? He said, here's the story I want to tell. I'm going to do the same thing with Star Wars that I did with Star Trek. Take a story everybody knows, polish it up in a few places, put a few different people in, and we'll just tell the story for a new generation, screw everybody else.
There might be some truth to that, but also I've read that, again, I don't know how truthful this is, but, you know, George, I don't feel sorry for him. He made his $4 billion, you know. But the fact is, he had gone there with some ideas, and again, I've heard allegedly that J.J. basically ripped those up and said, you know. And I'm pretty convinced that I don't think he would have wanted, because, you know, Han Solo was like one of his favorite characters, and I don't think he would have wanted him to go down like that.
Publicly said he was upset.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that's like, that was. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a character that he basically is like a son to him, and for him to go down like that. And again, like I said, I'm not opposed to watching this character die. I mean, it happens in movies, but to see him the way it was done, It was just, it was mean spirited. It's like you have this whole story of this growing up. You watch these movies going on, you know, and then suddenly they mirror life. They have a, you know, they get a couple, they divorce Princess Leia and Han, and then they have a child along the way. But then they, you fill in these blanks about, well, now you have this disgruntled kid who becomes basically enchanted with his uncle, who is Darth Vader, and then falls into the evils of the dark side, you know. And so all these things that are happening, which I'm filling in the blanks. But then you see this potential shot where he's like realizing it's his dad asking for him at the end. And it was like, okay, he's either going to accept him or he's going to kill him. And I just, the way it happened, I just was telling myself, I was watching it, I said, please don't kill him. And when they did it, it was just like, I just felt my throat was ripped.
What I've got to say is that, you know, in terms of any future movies, I don't, obviously Disney's not really going to listen to me, but if I had any say, I don't want any bigger Death Stars. I don't want five Death Stars. I don't want any more Death Stars. It was great the first time around. It was not necessary the second time around, and it's completely overdone the third time around.
It was ludicrous.
But it's bigger
now. That planet thing with Starkiller Base is ludicrous.
Yep.
Whose sun are they draining, by the way? Really, you've got a planet that can leave its own sun's orbit? That's pretty amazing.
Well, I'll say this, that was one of the places where I did get pulled out of the film. Somebody needs to get J.J. Abrams a basic course in astronomy.
Good luck with that.
And it's draining a sun. By the way, if you can drain a sun, you don't need to blow up a planet. If you've just drained that sun, the planets are all going to die really, really fast. So, I'm sorry. That was so ludicrous. I still can't figure out, did the planet move, did it leave its planetary orbit to go drain someone else's sun, or did it drain its own sun?
I mean, to be fair, though, you're talking about Star Wars, where spaceships go zipping around in outer space and they make explosions and loud noises. And
I've got no problem with that, because that is to let you know what's going on. I don't mind that as much. I mind something that ludicrous that I'm supposed to, and it's a major plot point, and I'm supposed to believe it. Something that ridiculously stupid that isn't, well, a silent battle, no one's going to be engaged. Okay, you can try to be as active as you want, but if we're watching people shoot silently, we want to hear pew, pew, pow, pow, oh, right? But we're trained to hear that. I don't mind that nearly as much. Stuff blows up on Star Trek, too. In a lot of science fiction movies, even ones that are pretty close to accurate, you're going to hear the noises, because we are auditory as well as visual, and we need to hear them. I'm sorry, we're draining a sun. They're draining a star somehow and not exploding.
I'm sitting here laughing to myself going, I would pay good money to see Neil deGrasse Tyson record a video scolding JJ for that.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Neil deGrasse Tyson did put something out talking about the, you know, the scientific fallacies of Star Wars, and boy did I see like all kinds of people up in arms in their comments about.
You have to send me that link.
Okay, let me see if I can find it, and I will. Yeah.
Okay, so we've pretty much covered the bases that we're not entirely happy with what this story has done to our memories of the franchise, of the myth, and minor and major plot points that needed probably some polishing before it was put on film. But overall, what do you think this does to Star Wars as an entirety?
Makes it more money. those of us that didn't like it, we are in the vast minority. People are paying money to see it over and over again. It is entertaining, and it's got the best marketing machine on the planet going for it. Now, they're all going to make a fortune. I'm done, but no one else is.
Yeah, I'm not done yet either. I mean, I've already, you know, it's what's done is done. I'm hoping that they explore new worlds. And again, they will. So I am excited for the future. I want to see it a real story, you know, more of an existential story that's going to make you leave the theater and think that was a real great science fiction movie. Just a good old fashioned, you know, like a space opera, like we refer to, like commonly refer to. And maybe it's, maybe we'll get that, you know, there's going to be a huge budget behind it, but I somehow don't think that's going to be the case. Cause you know, it's always going to be about selling toys, putting people at the, selling Disney park, you know, cause you got the Disney Star Wars coming up, which I'm excited about, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So at the risk of being a hypocrite here, yeah, but I'm excited for the future.
Well, I guess for me, I'm going to come back to what I was saying earlier, you know, going off the point that Tim made, filling in the gap that you've had your own imagination about. And unfortunately, you know, for me, what it kind of does is it in some ways ruins my fantasy of what the next step of Star Wars would have looked like. So, I mean, of course, I'm going to be curious to see what do they do for Episode 8. I'm sure I'm going to go see them all, but it does take something away from me because I did have some real ideas of, boy, wouldn't it be great if they did Episode 7 and it looked like X, if they got away from just purely the dark and the light and the Galactic Empire and the Rebellion, and they really went into just exploring this fantasy universe and take me to some new fantastic worlds and with some new fantastic creatures and play around with the Force as something more than just light and dark. And so for me, it kind of takes away some of my excitement and imagination for what Star Wars could have been, where it could have gone. But again, we'll see what it does. We'll see where they go from here.
You know, it's funny you talk about imagination. Well, as a kid, the only thing I ever imagined about was Princess Leia.
Yeah.
At the risk of being misogynistic here.
Did you see the Graham Norton bit where Carrie Fisher's talking to Daisy Ridley about what she can expect?
I've read about some of this.
One of the one I saw is that Carrie Fisher recounts being approached by a man who said that when he was a younger man, he thought about her all the time. And Carrie said, all the time? He said, well, at least four times a day.
Oh, geez.
and she turned to Daisy Ridley and said, that's what you've got coming for you. And the look of horror on her face is just priceless.
Yeah, it was a rite of passage.
To give extra time, there were many of us who were either very much in love with Luke or, in my case, very much in love with Han. So that worked both ways.
Yep. I'll say, going into Episode 7, I really had no expectations. After the prequels, it was like, you know, okay, they told the story, it was very unsatisfying, but that's fine. And I pretty much avoided any spoilers, any pre-production things, because I just kind of wanted to go in to see this movie with fresh eyes. And that's part of it, I'll admit. Part of why I enjoyed it is because I had no expectations.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I'll be interested to see what the next movie has.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and one thing that I will say, though, about the new movie, for all the things that were letdowns for me, it definitely captured the look and the feel and the spirit of the original movies, I thought, very well. I think we've kind of alluded to that already.
You know, the one thing I have to come to grips to too is that, speaking about this, how upset I was over some of the things that they did, that's coming from an older fan that's been still connected, and maybe it's just me that needs to let that part go. But because I can imagine if you're younger, this will be their new hope.
Maybe
they're not. Yeah, I hope not.
Well,
My daughter didn't like it. You know,
okay.
And it was fairly okay. I mean,
well, how old is your daughter?
25.
Yeah, see,
so
that's...
You you could say Phantom Menace and all of those were their generations. And I guess you could use that as an excuse, but I feel like it's just an excuse. If a movie is good, it talks to everyone.
Well, I agree with that ultimately, which is why I reacted the way I did. And to me, it's just a sign of bad filmmaking when you take something that's been basically a part of a culture and you destroy it in such a bad way. Like I said, you know, it's like I'm not opposed to how they've been doing that. It's just, you know, I've gotten desensitized, I guess, being a Game of Thrones fan and Walking Dead. If you kind of get used to watching characters die. But again, it comes back to, it's just, like I said before, the story was told. I was happy with the way it all ended. And like Tim said, maybe it was all about money, which actually furthers my argument even more.
Yeah. So what, I guess, I really guess we don't have too much more ground to cover except on the topic of rewriting history. Has Disney released on DVD or Blu-ray the original theatrical versions of episodes 4, 5, and 6 yet?
I don't think they're out yet. Those I do plan on getting.
Not the original cuts. I think they've got the special editions out on Blu-ray.
But not the original cuts.
But not the original cuts.
I have those on VHS.
I used to have them on Laserdisc.
Ah, seriously?
Yeah.
Well, you used to. I mean, you don't have them anymore.
No, I don't have them anymore. I don't even have a player anymore, so.
Probably worth some money.
Actually, they weren't, because other people were selling them on eBay, and the prices were not attractive at all. So
nobody's got a laser.
Exactly, just nobody's got the player anymore.
Well, you're going to run into those collectors, and I guarantee you, in time, it will find its place. Because, like everything, passes. You know, you're always going to have that.
Everybody who still has a Laserdisc player already has either the single individual movies or that big black box case. I've seen that big black collector's edition box set of the original cuts. I've seen that in used bookstores for like $20.
Well, I'm a completist and I have to own it on every format, so you know.
Well, you should be able to find that one, but I'm waiting for the original theatrical cuts someday to hit home video so I can see them again. You know,
that would be swell.
They're on DVD.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. They're not in any sort of restored format. You can see the matte lines around everything and you know, it's basically looks like just a transfer off a semi-decent print. But the collection I've got, it's the special edition, all nice and shiny, and then the original releases in sort of semi-crappy condition.
Huh.
I missed that release then.
Yeah. Did
that come out?
Oh, gosh. It's got to be about...
Because Star Wars didn't actually officially hit DVD until like 2004 or 5, 2006 maybe?
So it's been not quite 10 years yet. Mm-hmm.
And Lucas always said that the original theatrical cuts would never hit home video as long as he drew breath. And I remember wanting to choke him with his own flannel at that point, but...
Yeah.
Okay, well, we will reminisce, and hopefully some of our fans will tell us where that original episodes 4, 5, and 6 cuts can be found, or Tim can send me information on what he's got. And we will entertain responses, arguments for and against from all of our listeners. Yes, go ahead. Send us, leave us comments, call it in, 602-635-6976. Maybe we'll get enough feedback to have a point counterpoint Star Wars episode. But thank you, Noah, Darren, Tim, Jenny.
Thank you, Summer.
And like I said, if you loved the new Star Wars, if you hated it, chime in with your opinions and your observations, and we will continue this conversation on the website, on Twitter, and I think this argument is going to continue until episode 8 comes out. Oh, but thank you, everybody.
Thank you. You guys have a good one, and see you at the movies.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
You're home from the comic book store with your favorite titles. Wouldn't they read better while listening to Krypton Radio?
Yes, so Star Wars has once again rejuvenated our lives, rejuvenated our imaginations, and jump-started a whole new series of arguments. What do you do when something as beloved as Star Wars isn't captivating audiences like it should? Is it captivating audiences? What are your thoughts on the new Star Wars? How it affects the Star Wars that the mythology that you grew up with, the mythology that you came to love, or does episode 7, 8, and 9 not even affect your memories of 4, 5, and 6? Will it help or hurt your memories of episodes 1, 2, and 3? I guess we all just have to see whether or not episodes 7, 8, and 9 become like the original episodes 4, 5, and 6, or fade into mediocrity like the Matrix sequels. Don't get me started there. You know better. But I know you have your opinions. I know your friends have opinions. Let us know. Share those opinions. Maybe you thought some of what you heard today was right. Maybe you thought some of it was way off base. Let us know. Call that in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can send in an email to summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also record your own message and email that to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Or if it's a longer commentary, you can email me a Dropbox link or Hightail link or whatever large file format service you prefer. Any other questions and comments on previous or upcoming shows, send those in too. Leave us a review on iTunes. I think you can also leave reviews for the show on TuneIn and Stitcher. I just discovered that. If you're listening on your mobile device through those services, give us feedback there too. Check us out on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. Check us out on Google plus Slice of Sci-Fi. Not sure what the deal is with the Facebook. I don't have a Facebook minion anymore. We are Facebook minionless. And I believe both the Facebook page and group might be lying dormant. If anybody is on Facebook who can check that out for me, just give me a heads up. That'd be sweet. As always, the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on over. Leave your comments there. We also have Writers After Dark, kickassmysticninjas.com. Yes, I'm going to keep saying that because that is underway, believe it or not. And we also have itscomicbookday.com. Thank everyone for your donations, your pledges via Patreon, and your PayPal donations. Don't know if you've noticed yet, but sliceofscifi.com is on a new server. Things are a little faster. The site is responding a little bit faster. I know some people had experienced some delays. Hopefully that will be completely resolved now. And it was your donations that made that possible. So thank you. If you want to contribute, via the Patreon page. That is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. Or you can follow the buttons on the website, both for PayPal and for Patreon. We will be hearing more soon from Noah and Darren as we get into the spring movie season. There are some fine horror and sci-fi movies coming up, and comic book movies, of course, that we'll get some more video reviews from them. That'll be on Slice of Sci-Fi TV. So we have more reviews on the way for indie movies, mainstream movies of the paranormal, science fiction, fantasy, horror genres. We have more reviews for the current TV shows that are playing, that everyone's jumping onto. And if you want to submit a review or commentary on a TV show that we're not covering, just because we're bases loaded and no hands free to check out all the shows, contact me. Email me, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com, saying, hey, I can do a TV review for you, or hey, I can do a review of this movie for you. Let me know. We can work something out. And as always, I want to give out a special shout out to Sci-Fried for the wonderful theme music they have provided for us here. You can check out more music from them over at sci-friedband.com. But that will do it for this episode. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.